We've got Karen Doerr and Sharon Hewitt. I'm Paul Fishwick. I direct the a lab called Creative Automata, and in there, one of the things we do is we build models of automata and formal systems, and think abstract mathematical things. But we do that using tangible products and what we think to be personalized products. So let me just say something briefly about myself, and then we'll kind of go around the table. I'm a faculty member here in arts and technology and also computer science, and my research area is modeling and simulation. And I'm very interested in personalized learning and modeling.
So I'm Karen Doerr, and I'm a PhD student in the computer science department here at UT Dallas. I'm also an instructor, and I teach beginning computer science to our arts and technology students. My research is in this area of learning science and computer science, and how can we make abstract computing concepts easier to learn. So can we create web applications that would make things easier to learn?
Hi, I'm Sharon Hewitt, and I'm an MFA student in arts and technology here at the University of Texas at Dallas. I'm also a research assistant in the Creative Automata Lab, and I'm interested in educational technologies, interactive documentary, and video, and how we can use that in education. One of the things that we've just done recently in the lab is we've produced a video about personalized learning, and it's called Personalized Learning Through Multiple Models. The reason we produced this video was to enter it into a contest for the National Academy of Engineering. It's an annual contest that they have, and this year in particular, they had 14 grand challenges that they wanted to address. One of those was personalized learning. And what our video does is it explains why personalized learning is needed to make a difference in the 21st century. It shows some of the research that the lab is doing, some of the examples of our work that we're doing that align with personalized learning, because we research learning styles and then difficult to understand concepts that have a broad impact on learning. And then we present those models. The concepts featured in the video are integration is defined in calculus, which is presented using four different prototypes that we have created in the lab. And anyway, you can view that video here on this podcast page at the link below and like it. We'd love to have you take a look at it.
So here's a question. Let's see. Personalized learning. How difficult is personalized learning to actually pull off? Because I think back to the Stone Age when I grew up and I had to go through school, and it's true that it was anything but personal. There was usually the material was taken right out of a book and made impersonal. So what are the challenges? I don't know. Let's talk about the challenges.
Well, so it's difficult to, like, so when I'm teaching the concepts in my course, computing concepts, it's really difficult to come up with some way to teach the concepts short of me just standing and lecturing. It's really difficult. So the more that we can develop apps or tangible articles that can be something that we can, as a group in the class, interact with, it gives us something to discuss. So the more we can have discussion, the better, because otherwise it just ends up with one person, the teacher, lecturing, and it's the students have a hard time actually taking in what they're hearing, if they're even paying attention, taking it in and actually processing it.
So. And Karen, something that you've said before that I think is very relevant is having multiple representations of one concept,
right,
so that people have different approaches at looking at things, and they can look at it in multiple ways.
Yeah, I think that's important, because if you look at something in one perspective, you might think that you understand it completely, but then if you have a good representation that also provides a different perspective, you might be able to show things in that different perspective that weren't obvious from the initial way that they were looking at it. So it's kind of a way to have someone probe their understanding of a concept by having, because each type of representation has its strengths and weaknesses. So one representation where you're interacting with it, you know, you kind of learn certain things, but maybe using an equation is actually a nice way to communicate with other people in a concise way. So all these forms of representation, whether it's a graph or whether it's a diagram or an animation or an equation, they're all ways that we can try and represent information, and hopefully that we can communicate with each other about it and really probe our understanding of it. So there's no one better way necessarily, but the more ways that are linked to one concept, the more ways that we can explore our understanding of it.
Yeah, and address different types of learning styles and things like that.
Right.
So you mentioned, Karen, you mentioned something about, which I resonated with, the idea about mathematics or equations, which we typically think of in text form, as being for communication. And I would kind of agree with that, is that that's the basis of describing mathematics in notational form is for communicating to other people, and other people read it, and they know the notation, so they understand it. Which is very different, it seems, than if you are trying to learn something to get motivated by it, which is not necessarily for communication purposes, it's to get excited about something.
Right.
So there's this sort of interplay between using notation because it's good for communication versus using something to understand the concept because you created it yourself, for example.
Right, yeah. And the idea is that, in a sense, when someone, it's really hard as a teacher to understand what your students are not understanding. So when we use equations, it's hard as a teacher to not think, oh, of course they understand what that symbol means. But actually, we're asking them to learn a concept and associate the concept with the symbol that the instructor already understands what the symbol means, but the student really doesn't. So learning is kind of them understanding a concept and then associating it with the symbol. That's, it's kind of hard to do.
Yes, and I think what's important is that we've given them representations that map to a symbol in a way, like with the water computer that we are creating in the lab, the tanks of water that show the rise and decline of the population, say, in the predator-prey model.
Yeah, one thing I love about we built a water computer, and one thing that I love about it is that it's a machine. And you look at the water computer and you look at this machine, and every part of that machine has meaning and relates to the equation. So if you look at part of the machine and you're like, well, why in the world is there a tube of water going into it and a tube of water going out of it? And if you can't directly map that physical part of the machine to the equation, then you can identify, oh, I really don't understand that. I don't understand that that's flow and that it's the difference between the inflow and the outflow that's going to determine what the value is in the accumulated container in the next timestamp. So there's this one-to-one mapping from a machine to an equation that allows you to really identify, here's a tangible thing that I don't understand.
So it's about an analogy to some extent,
yeah,
right? You're forming an analogy with the water for what's going on.
Yeah, with our machine.
Yeah.
Yeah, that has valves. And so what's controlling the valve? Can I control the valve? No. That was when we first looked at the water computer, I was really confused. And I kept saying, wait a minute, I want to turn the valve. And, right?
Right.
And so that was a huge learning thing for me, is that no, I cannot control the valve. I can control a slider, that's the birth rate, but the valve is controlled also by the current population. So that's feedback in the system. So
right.
It was this, initially the first prototype that I made, which was my web design, had a handle on it, on the valve. And then I had to take that away because the handle to me was an affordance that meant I could turn it. I had to take that away so that it was clear that, no, you don't have the ability to control that in the way that you might instinctively feel like you do. So a lot of the analogies are using like a bathtub for doing this analogy of water flow to calculus and integration. They use a bathtub and they show a spigot. And to me, that just encouraged my misunderstanding.
Right. No, that makes a lot of sense. Also, what's interesting about this model, a system dynamics model, is, And Karen, we talked about this a little bit. The Jay Forrester at MIT, who created this method, he was an engineer who then went into the business school, right, and decided he took his engineering philosophy, which tends to be diagrammatic. Engineers think diagrammatically, right, whether they're right. making a printed circuit board, whether they're designing something else. There's a tendency to draw pictures. There's not a tendency to draw pictures in math. I mean, I took math as an undergrad, and pictures were not part of the syllabus, right? And so I think that's an interesting point to make as well, is that engineering as a culture has something to say here, because that you can visualize, that you can make analogies of something. We're kind of bringing the engineering culture, which kind of formed in the, I guess, the late 19th century, into play here to some extent.
Yeah, I agree. I see several different levels based on what you two are talking about. I'm seeing, you know, there's the text-based, then there is playing or manipulating a physical model that someone else has made, and then there's also making the model yourself. And those seem like two, you know, several different levels that need to be addressed in learning. In fact, one of the students I interviewed for one of the videos we produced here in the lab actually said that about the model he produced. He said, you know, I always worked with this integration symbol, but I never knew what it really meant until I created this model.
So that's it. Now, that's a really good point, Sharon. So I guess the question I would have for that is, I've been wrestling with this, but does the mathematics, let's say the integration, we would say, I think we might want, at least I would say, that the integration is not in the typographic symbol, the long S, right?
Right.
That it's somewhere in the mind, and do we get to know integration through all these multiple models? I mean, that's where I'm kind of, that's my sort of philosophical thing, but I don't know whether people find, if that's a problem, to think of, you know, we, as you see all these multiple things that reflect integration, that seems to represent a deep understanding of that concept. Not what it's, not using a typewriter or not using its typographic symbol.
That's exactly what he said. He said that it never hit home what was actually occurring, and now he really understands it. So
it worked for him.
Yeah, and that's with all his strong math background.
Exactly.
You know, and that's kind of, I would say that's the same with me. That's my experience, was that math for me was manipulating symbols. It was a game of manipulating symbols, and it was hard to connect that to the real world. And so I think our model does give you this intuitive connection with something real that lets you understand integration better.
It could be a new movie. We have the Game of Thrones, and now we have the Game of Symbols, which is like you say. I mean, that's the way math tends to be taught, is the Game of Symbols. You move these little pieces of paper around,
right?
And that's math. But it really isn't math, is it?
Right. Like it's a scale of symbols that you move from one side of the scale to the other side of the scale. And as long as the scale stays balanced, you're like, got it. It's a puzzle.
Right.
But, there's no connection to the real world.
Exactly. And for the deep learning, you know, to solve a lot of the problems that we're going to have in the 21st century, we're really going to need, for this deep understanding, we're going to need to be able to do more than just play games and move, you know, learn how to game this formula.
Right. And so research shows that if we can, that it's not like you have to be a senior level engineer, undergraduate student as a senior to actually be capable of understanding integration. So some research have shown that young students can actually understand integration if they're shown like a physical model, like our water computer, mm-hmm. that they can actually start understanding the concepts because they already have this physical intuition and experience of working with water. So the goal is to try and say, what are our experiences that we've had that would help us to understand something like integration? How can we design some kind of learning machine or model to tie into our existing understanding, and then, that could help with personalized learning models?
Just a note to add to this, maybe as a kind of a wrap-up, but the arts also play a key role. I mean, I mentioned engineering, but the aspect of the arts is all about personal creativity, right? And so to the extent that someone has the ability to personalize by creating, is very much fits into this. So I think in a way this is arts-based practice in addition to being engineering-based.
Yeah.
So.
Creative disturbance.
Creative disturbance.
Creative disturbance.
Creative disturbance.
Creative disturbance.
Creative disturbance.
Creative disturbance.